It is 8:30, and we have with us live in the studios once again, Ja Parrish and Maria Tomczyk, both with Eat This Steak. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good to have you both back.
I had to walk 6 miles to get here through the drifts this morning.
I was mushing through slush this morning.
Very good. Luckily,
actually,
we have a...
It feels kind of subtropical out.
It actually felt really warm this morning. So, and amazingly enough, that's our first subject for the morning. You're doing a heck of a job, Greg Nichols.
Yeah, well, you know, he got the temperature to warm up. It's the city's snow removal campaign. You wait long enough and it melts. It's really effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder if that's going to be their garbage removal campaign as well.
We're going to wait long enough and the garbage is going to melt. It's really effective.
I'm just going to deputize the crows.
No, I think I found the worst aspect of the city's response this last week.
And that's saying a lot.
Yeah, saying a lot.
There's a lot of competition for that title.
Yeah, is that you'd get up every morning and you'd turn on the TV and you'd see pictures of Greg Nichols and hear the newscasters and you'd open the newspaper and you'd see them saying, leave your car at home, take the bus, it's okay to travel, you know, go shopping, et cetera, et cetera. Beware, you know, dress warm, there are long waits, you know, take it slow, et cetera. Metro's running at about 50%. Well...
Of what?
I know. I'm a bus rider. I don't own a car.
50% of what the buses in Wenatchee are doing.
Right, right. I don't own a car, so for me, it's not an option. I have to take Metro. And I would get dressed up really warm and go out and slog my way to the bus stop and wait. And wait and wait and wait. And in some cases, like waiting on 3rd Avenue downtown, where you know you've got 20 or more routes running during rush hour, you're standing there at 4 p.m. waiting and waiting and waiting, and there are two routes functioning. That is not 50% capacity. That's a total breakdown of the Metro bus system entirely. And there were times during this past week and a half when there were no buses running for very long periods of time, but you did not get that message from Mayor Nichols or from folks at Metro. You were simply told, check the website, and the website was never updated. Check the website, you know, be patient, blah, 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 blah. That, I think, is just terrible service.
Well, the same educational system that taught Greg Nichols his math also taught him how to grade. He gave himself and the city administration a B for how they handled the snow emergency. I believe there was a poll on King 5 yesterday where 87% of the respondents gave him either a D or an F. that B may be accurate. What the B could stand for, it could stand for bad, it could stand for bungled, it could stand for some things we don't want to say in the radio.
Botched.
You know, given that there is a history in other cities, certainly, of mayoral administrations being bounced from office, that's another B word, for their beautiful handling of the snow and snow removal. I mean, we were driving down Greenwood Avenue North on the north side of town yesterday. This is an arterial 6 days after the initial snowstorm that still has packed snow on the road on a major arterial.
It's a major
with buses.
Street. Yes.
Yeah. There's absolutely no excuse for how the buses were handled, for how the snow removal was handled, for how the garbage removal was or wasn't handled. And this all comes down, because it's across so many different departments and so many different agencies, it really comes down to a failure of political leadership, a failure of preparation, a failure of priorities, and that is directly
failure
at Greg Nichols' feet.
Communication, everything.
That is directly at Greg Nichols' feet.
Charlie Chong was right.
Yeah.
Back when he tried to get those snow plows.
And look what happened to him.
Mm. Yeah. Well, and what I find really interesting about it is Greg Nichols is from Chicago, so you'd think he would have some idea of how important it is to get the snow off the streets, but apparently he just didn't want to have to do anything on his month off.
Well, you know, since he's from Chicago, he doesn't necessarily know how to handle snow removal, but if we ever have a vacancy for a Senate opening, he'll know how to take bids. So, you know...
All right. Anything else on the snow or
no, let's
on?
Move on.
Let's move on.
It's melting.
All right. Speaking of storms, the updates on our economic storm.
Oh, yeah. A few things have happened in the 2 weeks that I've been away from the microphone. The Madoff scandal broke. Jack Madoff stole some $50 billion from
his... Isn't that the best name ever?
He certainly made off with something, didn't he? Well, he's going to have to disclose what his personal assets are to a judge has ordered him to do that by New Year's Eve. And we'll see what he tells them. It's amazing he hasn't given a list over to the FBI yet. Of course, the one aspect of the scandal is that we know when you remove regulations from the economic system that things like this happen. The greedy scum sort of rise to the top. So Madoff is no surprise to me, should be no surprise to anybody else. What I find interesting is that because the Bush administration has refused to beef up the FBI, particularly for its white-collar crime unit, that guys like Jack Madoff, well, they'll be investigated, maybe. Will the FBI be able to make any sense out of his financial tangle? I doubt it. And will he get prosecuted anytime soon? Well, don't hold your breath.
Now, bear in mind, these financial schemes are so complicated that it really takes a team of experts in financial crime. It takes a lot of resources to be able to investigate and prosecute these kinds of crimes. And
it takes whole teams of people.
And the resources and the expertise for that kind of investigation has been systematically gutted over the last 8 years, while all of the money went to fighting, you know, so-called war on terror.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And then the other news story that broke in the last 2 weeks, the auto bailout, the Bush administration literally turned around and said, well, we will give the auto companies the last few billions of dollars that we have left from the first half of the $700 billion bailout. And basically the Bush administration just kind of threw money at the problem and decided to hold off on making any kind of decision on what to do, leaving it in Obama's lap. So once again, in January or February, Barack Obama will be in office and the auto companies are going to come to him and say, we need more money, we need help, blah, 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 and it'll be his problem. So that's what happened with the auto bailout.
I think it's pretty similar to the approach that the Bush administration has taken with
the banking industry.
Everything.
Pretty much putting off the problem until the next president gets into power. Henry Paulson, as I've said before, Henry Paulson and Ben Bernanke, their response to the whole economic crisis has been to try to throw money at it in order to roll back the clock to 2005. Which in their minds was the height of the boom and what we, you know, sort of the ideal conditions that they would like to repeat as soon as possible. You can't go back, and you don't want to go back, because to go back to those economic conditions would be to make the problem even worse. So instead of doing anything really proactive, they've just been pouring money into the pockets of these rich bank, you know, the executives at these banks, who, of course, because they're private entities and because the government will not and refuses to take any kind of controlling interest in these banks when they should be taking control of them completely, we will have no accounting at all of what's going to happen to that money. And it's just putting the problem off. You can bet that these banks are not going to recover in 2009. They're going to come back to Obama probably, I'm guessing, early in the second quarter of 2009, and with their hands out saying, we need more help, we need more help, help us out, et cetera. And then it's going to be his decision what to do.
Okay. Before we get on to the next part, Virgil mm-hmm. Howard had written in asking, which a couple of questions you just answered, but so do you anticipate we'll ever see the money again?
I doubt it. I seriously doubt it. I mean, part of what Obama's going to have to do is he's going to have to decide whether or not, as part of the relief plan in 2009 for these big banks, whether or not to forgive the loans we've already given them. And I'm guessing that's going to be a big part of it. So I'm, you know, as far as I can see, big chunks of money are going to just go right out the door, right out the treasury, and not ever come back. That's my guess. But, you know, it's impossible to say for sure. But if it were me, I would turn the tap off and say, you guys, sorry, the money stream is over. As part of all that, GMAC GMAC is the financing arm of General Motors. Pretty much GMAC was established in order to provide cheap auto loans to GM customers to buy cars. GMAC got in on the mortgage lending business, and that's just taken them downhill even faster. In the last 3 or 4 years, they got into writing risky mortgages as well. And now they've filled out all the paperwork and pushed and pushed and pushed, and the Treasury sped up the process of declaring them a bank holding company so that GMAC can get in line for bailout funds as well. What's going to happen is the government's going to give them bailout money, and GMAC, now that they're a bank holding company, will take that money and probably buy a smaller bank that has deposits in order to become, in truth, a true bank holding company, which they're really not now. They're just that in name.
Now I have a pet gerbil named Global Bank Corp. Can I get him to be a bank holding company?
A bank holding company? Well, if you've got enough pull in D.C., I'm guessing you can.
Well, I guess I just want to square the circle here. When you talk about the money, it's our money. And it's our
children's
our money,
yes.
And it's
it is taxpayer money.
Yeah, and there is no accounting for it.
Yeah, and it should be going for useful things, things that create jobs, things that help rebuild our communities. You know, it shouldn't be going down the black hole of executive compensation and bank mergers.
Well, somebody benefits. Somebody actually gives those massages at five-star resorts to overworked CEOs.
I'm sure, but that's not an efficient way to create jobs.
All right, moving on, because we still got a lot to cover. Big disaster in Tennessee.
Yeah, the Tennessee coal ash disaster, which we found out in the last 24 hours is actually three times as large as it originally was. Originally, the Tennessee Valley Authority reported that 1.7 million cubic feet of square feet of used coal ash dust was released when a holding dam broke in eastern Tennessee, wiping out the river that it was next to, wiping out a number of residences along the way, certainly wiping out the marine life in the area. We now found, the Tennessee Valley decided to actually measure the damage, and they came up with a figure of 5.1 million. And this is leading a lot of environmentalists, those cranky naysayers, to say something like, well, you know, how come it is that it's a government agency that is whose actions or lack thereof have led directly to this disaster? How come they're the only ones who are actually being allowed to investigate this disaster? So there's a lot of calls for accountability around that. It also really points up a truism that, you know, there is no such thing as clean coal, unless you want to talk about it, you know, cleaning out the marine life, cleaning out the residences in the area, you know, etc. It's the same thing as the idea behind clean nuclear energy. The waste has got to go somewhere, and until people figure out what to do with that waste, it's not a clean energy providing source.
All right, and moving on to international and Israel and Palestine.
Yeah, a major bombing campaign by Israel in the last 24 hours. Several hundred people killed and wounded in the Gaza Strip. And the reporting on this, to the extent that there has been reporting in U.S. media and the AP and newspapers like the New York Times and Washington Post, has been dreadful. The AP story this morning reporting the Israeli bombings and reporting the wounded and reporting that these are in retaliation for Palestinian rockets fired across the border. Well, yes and no. There's no mention in this that Gaza has been under siege for the last couple of years. No mention that the framing of it was, well, the moderate Palestinian leader Abbas condemned the raids, but the radical Hamas seized power in Gaza. No, Hamas was actually elected in Gaza, which started this whole process a couple of years ago because Israel and the United States didn't like the way the free and fair elections went. So all of this context is missing. The fact that Israel had conducted airstrikes over the past several days that killed several Palestinians and the rocket fire was in retaliation for that. This doesn't excuse the rocket fire, mind you, but it's basic reporting that both sides are committing atrocities. And in American media, you're only getting one side of the story. It really is truly dreadful one-sided reporting by U.S. media. And you don't see this when you go to British and European sites.
All right. Well, that leaves about half the show left for covering this year's Eat the State Regularly Does, the overhyped and underreported stories of the year. And you're going to start this week with the overhyped?
Yeah, we do this every year. This is the 13th year in a row we've done the overhyped stories of the year and the underreported. We'll do the underreported next week for 2008, so you'll have something to look for because, let's face it, the week between Christmas and New Year's is usually kind of a slow week, and so we we like to look back and look forward. But let's start with the overhyped. And do you want to do the local or the national international first?
I have mostly local stuff.
Okay.
Myself.
Well, which do you want to do first?
Why don't we do the local first?
Okay. So let's run through these. So a lot of these are yours, Maria. So I'll let you narrate them. But local hype story: the tunnel that refused to be buried.
Oh yes, that's the downtown.
The tunnel from the undead.
The downtown tunnel replacement for the Alaskan Way Viaduct. Yes, voters voted it down. People have complained. And state planners have said no, it's too expensive. We don't have the money for it. Pretty much everybody has said no to it except for Mayor Nichols and the Downtown Business Association are pushing it and pushing it and pushing it, and it refuses to die.
So why is this overhyped? Because it keeps getting reported?
It just keeps getting reported. It keeps getting pushed. You know, you keep seeing headlines in the Seattle Times and the PI saying, tunnel still alive.
So speaking of still alive, what about the arena that wouldn't die?
The arena that wouldn't die.
Ooh.
Yes, the Sonics are long gone. Even Key Corp seems to be fading into history, but Key Arena is still around as a black hole for city and state money.
Oh, and even the hockey team actually moved out of Key Arena
as
well.
Yes, I think so.
But the thing is, you keep seeing these stories in the media about, well, if we go to the state and the state legislature has a lot of money to throw around
right.
this year, why don't we refurbish Key Arena and then we can go back to the NBA, which said that there would never ever be another team in Seattle ever, and maybe they'll give us a new team.
Yeah.
It really is irresponsible reporting. But that gets into the whole fetish that our local media has for sports teams, and one of the ones that I had that was the feudal sports year for the ages, which, you know, the Sonics had their worst year in their history and then left town. The Mariners and Seahawks were supposed to win their divisions, and instead were among the worst teams in their league. The Washington State Cougars were widely considered to be the worst team in the history of college football until that is the end of the year when they beat the 0-12 University of Washington Husk. It was hilarious. It was just one, you know, you listen to the sports radio talk shows, and it's like people are threatening to jump off the Aurora Bridge. And
I have a question for that.
It might be a good thing. The fewer sports fans we have in this city, the more money we'll have freed up for other more important things.
Oh, I was listening to an archive.
There go the phone lines blinking.
Yeah, lots of sports fans listen to us.
Yeah, I was listening to an archive interview last night and was reminded that the NFL is considered a non-profit organization. Do you know if, like, the NBA and the other, you know, the
NFL is a non-profit.
Yeah.
That's
it's officially a non-profit.
And Bill Gates is a philanthropist.
Yeah.
Next.
No, it is officially a non-profit.
So, overhyped. A streetcar system for Seattle. This is going to solve
everything.
Oh, yes. What's the hype there?
We keep hearing about the upcoming streetcar system for Seattle. Look, we don't even have the money to build the extension of the first streetcar line to the U District, which would actually make it useful. So
even though it would replace the most heavily used bus lines in the city.
Yeah. I mean, the only money that's on the table right now for any streetcar construction is for something to replace the waterfront streetcar, and that came with the vote on Proposition 1 in November. So the fact that the city council is sitting down and laying the plans for an entire streetcar system for Seattle just shows you how much the mayor and his cronies on the city council can how much of a disconnect they have with reality.
Okay, so speaking of the mayor loves music in the city of Seattle.
This is after spending a couple of years trying to close down every live music club he can.
Well, no, only the ones where, you know, those people go.
Yeah. People who are not like him.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but so, if it's smooth jazz, he loves it.
Yeah, if it's smooth jazz or it's Benaroya Hall, then it's okay. But, so he, in was it November, October, November, he declared Seattle a music mecca and brought out his big hype of let's promote music in the city of Seattle. It had the whole music community rubbing their necks and wondering why they had whiplash.
Well, you know, I will take him seriously when he starts promoting the AARP eligible dance ordinance to prevent people over the age of 50 from dancing in clubs.
All right, next.
Yes. Oh, yes. Gun bans in public parks.
Why don't you handle that? You've been talking about that a lot this year.
What a good idea. Yeah. this is something that, that again, is a mayoral initiative. Why is it that we keep saying Greg Nichols? It's like a B movie. Oh, there's B again. anyway, gun bans in public parks. This was overhyped because there was a shooting. Gasp. It was those people at Folk Life in May. The first shooting in the history of a festival that goes back into the previous century.
By a person who was mentally ill and had not been treated for it because of the breakdown of the mental health system in this city.
And the fact that he was carrying a concealed loaded weapon was already in the violation of law. So what we need is a new law. Actually, this isn't even a law. It's a regulation promoted by Fiat, by Greg Nichols, that bans guns in public parks and public buildings. Well, this is the feel-good solution that doesn't solve anything. For one, it's unenforceable. For another, it's unconstitutional. It's probably going to cost the city a lot of money because the first person who does get detained for this, and probably gun rights groups are going to go out and just beg the city to get somebody detained by this so they can launch the lawsuit that collects millions of dollars from the city for violating some poor schmuck's constitutional right to carry a firearm. It really is a non-solution in search of a friendly headline in preparation for Greg Nichols running for re-election in 2009. That's what that story is all about. Now, speaking of hype, Boeing machinist strike and the way that it really, really severely impacted that poor schedule for Dreamliner.
Yeah, this is part of the underreported. This also touches on one of the underreported stories, too, because Boeing had to admit this year that, in fact, their Dreamliner was behind schedule because a major component of the airplane, the wing box, had been improperly designed and constructed, that they had to go back to the drawing board and redesign and rebuild the wing box, which is where the wings attach to the plane and also happens to be where the fuel tanks attach to the plane, not exactly a small part of the Dreamliner, and that is what really set them back in their schedule this year. But boy, that didn't stop them from saying over and over and over again, oh, those machinists, oh, that machinist strike, that's what's delaying us. That was hype.
Yep. And we want to move on to national and international also, but finally we have to give the honorary mention, as we do every year, to car crashes, fires, violent crimes, big and not so big weather events, complete with catchy logo, Arctic Blast 2008. Heartwarming stories of photogenic, plucky survivors, preferably kids overcoming adversity, and every other staple of Chuckle Buddy news. With the reason we keep referencing the Times and the PI and the daily papers on this website is because there is almost no actual news on the television stations here in town, and that that void is filled, and the time that they devote to news is actually filled by infotainment that isn't news at all. It's almost all hype. So, anyway, moving on to global, this was your phrase, so I'm going to let you take the heat for it, the Great Black Hope.
Why don't you run with that, since that was your story?
Oh, okay. No, I think it was yours, actually. We're each blaming the other person for this. Yeah. This was the basic meta narrative that overcame it basically pervaded a lot of the blogosphere, a lot of the progressive media, the idea that Barack Obama is going to come into power on January 20th, 2009, and everything is going to get all better. Well, not exactly. I mean, it will be very nice that somebody with an actual inquisitive mind that he's willing to use will be in the White House and has some interest in the actual problems that he is charged with solving rather than making them worse. The first rule of holes, stop digging. We will have gotten that far. But Barack Obama is not going to make everything better all by himself. And in fact, the problems that have been created, not just over the past 8 years, but over the past 30 years or longer, are going to take a long time, probably more than one, probably more than two administrations by anybody in order to fix. And certainly in terms of the economy and in terms of foreign policy, a lot of things are likely to get worse before they get better. So expectations need to be readjusted.
Well, and you're right, Jav. I know I complained about this a lot during the presidential campaign, saying, boy, all these people coming out to vote for the first time for Barack Obama, I hope they're not disappointed because he's a Democrat. Okay, remember what Clinton was like as a mainstream Democrat that leans towards the conservative side of his party, which means, you know, they're the left wing of the Republican Party, that there's not going to be a lot of change. It's certainly going to be better than George W. Bush, but a lot of it's going to be business as usual, and I hope folks are not too disappointed because of that, because I don't see him as the great black hope. I see him as, well, yes, historically he is the first African-American president, and yes, that is pretty cool, but he's a Democrat, and he's a conservative Democrat, and he's a go-along, get-along kind of guy.
And he's going along and getting along in an environment where the goalposts have been moved. What is reaching
far
across,
to the right.
What is reaching across the aisle to the conservatives means a lot more conservative now than it did even 8 years ago, let alone 20 or 30.
Yeah.
So you also had on your list of national overhyped Sarah Palin.
Oh yeah, and
I
didn't think that needed any explanation. In fact, just typing her name as part of the story made me want to get up and go take a shower afterwards.
Speaking of taking a shower, I had down here on the list celebrity gossip with the inscription, Brittany has custody of her kids again. The fact that I even know this fills me with an indescribable self-loathing. Speaking of taking a shower, I also had on the list for national overhype Obama versus Clinton. Now, this obviously is now a non-story because Hillary Clinton is working for Barack Obama. But if you remember, for about 3 months between March and June of this year, Hillary Clinton mathematically had no chance of getting the Democratic nomination to become president. Barack Obama had a string of 11 straight primary victories in February and March, mathematically wrapped up the nomination. But the media and the Washington punditocracy, with the able help from the Clinton campaign, we kept getting this narrative that Clinton is on the verge of this remarkable comeback. It's not over yet. This next primary is the one that could decide it.
She's running a tough race. This is going to split the Democratic Party, et cetera, et cetera.
Were it not for Sarah Palin and the great back hope, this would be the overhyped story of the year. It was an absolute media construct that really misled a lot of people. And then finally on my overhyped stories, I had the Beijing Olympics. And I had it for a couple of reasons. Not because the Olympics aren't cool, because they are, but because there were thousands of world-class athletes in Beijing not named Michael Phelps. That was one. And then number two, the Chinese government bid for and won the Beijing Olympics because they calculated correctly that media in the rest of the world, particularly the United States, would use this as an opportunity to send a love note to China and a love note to the Chinese government and all of their policies, including the human rights abuses, including the incredible environmental degradation, which we only read about when the poor marathoners had to breathe the Beijing air for 26 miles. There were any number of stories that were just literally swept under the carpet of problems with one of the most repressive governments in the world that is no longer considered a bad government in the United States, because instead of being communist totalitarians, now they're capitalist totalitarians, and that's okay. That made it an overhyped story. And that was 2008. We might have much to look forward to in 2009, but first, next week, we'll take a look at all those underreported stories that you've been hearing here, and maybe a few other places if you poke around during the past year.
And
we've got some great ones.
And if people want a sneak peek, they can always go to the website.
Yeah, we have it up on the web.
That's right. The Eat the State paper, many of them are still sitting at our distribution point.
There you go.
Because many of our distributors are still lost in the drift somewhere, wandering around in Greg Nicholls' B-movie. But it is up on the website, www.eatthestate.org.
All right. Talking, as we do just about every week, with Jav Parrish and Maria Tomczyk, both of the Eat the State. And in addition to the website, where else can people find you this day?
You can find it.
We'll try to get it out to
you. You can find it in recycling bins. No, normally it's at bookstores and cafes, King County Library System, et cetera. It's in some of those places this week, and there'll be more as the week goes by. And I should mention also, we're talking about Eat the State, circle on your calendars now January 20th, because it is not only Inauguration Day, but we're having a fundraiser on that day under the rubric of It's Safe to Laugh Now. We're doing a comedy benefit at the Comedy Underground. So that's a Tuesday night. Come on out and party with us at the Comedy Underground benefit for Eat the State. And we'll have details in weeks to come.
All right. And I guess that's it for us then, huh?
Yep. That's it. We're done.
All right.
Happy New Year.
We won't be back again this year. So there.
Okay.